You're listening to The Point. Last week, we stopped by the Cape Cod Cape Verdean Museum, nestled in an historic farmhouse in Falmouth. Barbara Burgo, founder and curator at the museum, joined us along with Wesley Late, the president of the museum. So when did this museum open and why was this location selected?
Well, that's a good question. It opened up in 2019 is when we started all the paperwork with the town. And the location came from David, which is our he's the state rep. Okay, we started conversation with him that we needed a place for a museum. That's when he brought us here and said, well, I think this might be a good location for you guys.
That was State Rep David Vieira that we're talking about. Yeah. So what originally brought Cape Verdeans to the Cape and Islands, and what compelled them to stay, Barbara?
Mainly, we're talking hundreds of years ago, literally. So one of the information pieces on the wall shows that one of the first naturalized Cape Verdeans lived on Nantucket, and it was in the 1700s. So whaling, of course, fishermen, we're a Portuguese colony, so they were very good seafarers. And then when we got here, of course, we collaborated and were taught by the Wampanoags, who were, of course, indigenous to this peninsula, and we did a lot of cranberry picking. The reason, well, we should say berry picking, cranberries, strawberries, blueberries, but the biggest reason in the late 1800s, early 1900s was the drought on Cape Verde. They would have to import 75% of their food products, so people came here looking for food, water, and work.
The history of Cape Verdeans is intertwined with the history of our region, right? But many people might not realize to what extent. What significant parts of the Cape Verdean history and culture did you want to be sure to represent here in the museum?
We wanted people to understand that Cape Verdeans worked very hard and came here for a better life. And all they asked for is equality, to be treated the same as everybody else.
How did you collect the items that are on display?
I've been collecting for 25 years, and some of the items came from Cape Verde directly. I went to college as a non-traditional college student with URI, University of Rhode Island, in Rhode Island College. I went on a summer seminar abroad, the oldest student going abroad to Cape Verde, and I started realizing there that what we have on the islands needs to be taught to the folks here in America, and what the U.S. has from the second and third generation needs to be brought back, even virtually, which is why we have the TVs here. We're soon going to be Zooming with the students in Cape Verde so that we can share experiences. So then once I brought back those items, 97, 98, and started collecting them, I started connecting with many people in Boston, in Rhode Island, in Connecticut, that also have Cape Verdean clubs like they do here in Falmouth. And a gentleman that has passed away, his family donated that information to me. His picture is on the wall. It is John P. Joli Gonsalves. And he had a cultural center, a very modest cultural center like this in New Bedford. And we've got collections from him. The artifacts are almost 100 years old.
I know this is probably like asking you, what's your favorite child, but do you have a favorite exhibit?
Yes. So my favorite exhibit, of course, is Nana's Kitchen. Because when I used to come to Cape Cod as a child, I was brought up in Taunton, but my mom was born in Howard. I remember my Nana's Kitchen looking this way. So we have period pieces in there, like the old-fashioned French fry press machine that's hand pressed, and they have curtains, gingham curtains on the cupboards like they used to have, no doors. And when people come into the kitchen like Wesley, the emotion is palatable.
All right, Wesley, what's your favorite?
That's my favorite. Yeah, just the fact that it takes you back anytime. It's like listening to your favorite song, and you know, it brings back emotion. So when I walked in there my first time, it was very emotional because it brings me back to my great aunt, my grandmother, and because I actually lived in a kitchen like that where I had no heat, an outhouse, and so it was pretty dramatic, actually. I think people will enjoy that when they come.
What are some of the more unusual pieces in the collection?
So one of the pieces that we have from Jolai Gonsalves that you don't even see down here in the main room right now, we had to kind of put it away because we have the second graders coming in. Three classrooms have already come through here. It is an old African drum, okay, like a djembe drum. I have asked people if they could date this for me, and I have heard it was 80 years old or more, 10 years ago, someone that came in who was a Wampanoag and Cape Verdean, you know, we intermarried a lot. He said at least that the way the wear was on the top, you know, the skin that they put on it, he said at least 80 or 90 years old, maybe 100. And that's why I'm saying to you, we have artifacts that are 100 years old.
I think that was probably a good idea to put that away because that's very tempting for some second graders to want to play on that, right?
We actually have quite a few of them that when we go to the schools, we bring the djembes there and an after-school program that we've just completed. They loved it, so that's what we took. So they love to play the djembes. Yeah. Yeah.
What are some of the signature Cape Verdean culinary dishes?
Oh, munchup would be one, or kachupa, depending on who's saying it. The conge. We cook a lot. Jag, yeah, I make a lot of that. That's about the most significant ones, I would think.
So manchup kachupa. So we've learned our language is now based on the Alapec version. So when we say like kachupa, it used to be with a C. So because of Portuguese, this is how you'd say it. But the Alapec version of the language is when you do ka. It's a K. So there's all kinds of controversy like there is with us about whether we're black or white or whether we're African or not. But it is a corn soup. It starts with samp, okay, which is a hard corn, and you put it in water overnight to soak it with lima beans, soak it. And it's one that almost every Cape Verdean kitchen loves, and we mention Rep. David Vieira. Whenever we make some, we have to save a bit for him. And the conge is a rice soup, okay, chicken rice soup, like you would get in maybe like a Chinese restaurant would have something a little more bland. We add a little bit of onion and maybe a red something like a ketchup or a tomato saucy, so it's a little bit thicker and red in color, so it's a little tastier, a little spicier. And Wesley's being modest. His wife makes the best.
Gufong. Gufong is a breaded, like a dessert. You can make it with squash, different things. Very difficult to make. When we first were introduced by her grandmother, she actually made it, and we couldn't even cook it right. So it took her a long time just to figure out the heat, the depth, and it was a lot. But it's delicious.
It's like a fried dough. So the Portuguese would say malasadas. It's not that thin and airy. It's not with that much sugar on it. So it's heavier, like if you had like an old-fashioned donut. So it's fried like a cruller, and it's fried dough like that. But almost every time we have an event, people are looking for manchupa or kachupa, and they want to know, where's the gufong?
So you mentioned connecting with the schools, but what other kind of connections do Cape Cod, Cape Verdeans retain with Cape Verde today?
Okay, so some of our proudest are not only with just the residents that are here and going back and forth to bring, we used to call it bidons, they're big barrels of clothing in the old days. Now we're sending educated folks back and forth. We're bringing folks here to get education. That's very important to the Cape Verdeans. It seems like they're youth because they don't have such access to it like ours. They speak 5 or 6 languages. They thirst for the education that our students get for free. One of our proudest educators is Dr. Dana Mollefaria. He actually, and I have to say this and hope I don't get it all wrong because I'm so proud of it, but he became, of course, the president of Bridgewater State University. And so he was the first or second Cape Verdean president of a four-year public school in the nation. He grew up right there in Nonset Wareham area, okay? And he now, I believe, lives here in Mashpee in his retired years. What he helped accomplish, not only a pilot program where some of the Cape Verdeans come over here and learn to be pilots and the youth go back and forth, they also, with the former president, Pedro Pierce, started the Pedro Pierce Institute for Cape Verdean Studies at Bridgewater State U. And that's who we're collaborating with to get our education piece grander than just Falmouth or Mashpee. We're going international.
You said something about speaking, you know, five or six languages. So is Portuguese the predominant language?
Thank you very much for that. Good question. It was, okay? It was when I was there in 97 and 98, and when you went to Parliament or you spoke with the president, that was the main language. Portugal was our colonizer, as you know. So we were trying to get independence, and so part of that is the language would evolve. So our familiar language is a Creole, not like French Creole, like Portuguese version of a Creole, okay? Creole, we would say. What has happened is the Alopec version now with the K rather than the C. One of my instructors from Rhode Island College, Manuel Deluge Gonçalves, ended up writing a Creole dictionary. Creole English Dictionary, and worked hard for many years to get the government to approve Creole as our main language. So until 97 or 98, it was necessary to speak Portuguese as a formal language, and ours was more a patois, more of a, you know, familiar language, a family language, and now it is the official language of Cape Verde.
You are next door to the East Falmouth Elementary School, so and you mentioned bringing drums. So I'm imagining you do collaborate with the school then?
Oh, absolutely. We've had a program. We just finished 6 weeks where we took a small of us and a Candida Rose. She actually sang and danced for the kids, and then we allowed the kids to play the djembes. It was really great, and they're actually starting another program with us from here, right? You want to speak on that?
That was the after-school program, okay? Superintendent Laurie Dewar and many of the folks from the school, Sarah Vendetti, the outreach program officer, started working with us. What we had said was we would love the teachers next door to come to this museum. We met with the principal of the school next door last year about this time, have him come take a look at what we're doing, get familiar. And he liked what he saw. He liked that we were right next door. And I suggested it would be great to have field trips with the students next door that they didn't have to take a bus. They could just walk over. What he said was it was not only important for the students to come here, but it was just as important for the teachers. Every teacher would come here. So when we spoke to Superintendent Dewar about that, I was so thrilled. She said she would do one better. She would make sure every student in Falmouth came through here and every teacher come through here. So last month we started tour buses with the second graders from North Falmouth. In 2 days we saw 64 students. And then today, this morning before you came here, we actually welcomed in Mullenhall students yesterday and today. Tour buses come through. While I was preparing for you today, I had to call President Wesley late to make sure it was okay because next door said, well, we know the second graders are coming, but we have a third grade class that's learning about culture. It's just a walk away, neighbor. Could we possibly come in June? And absolutely, we said yes. So this is getting grander than we ever thought. We haven't even been open a year in this building.
So you want to show us around a little bit?
Absolutely. come on this way. This is Nana's Kitchen. And in Nana's Kitchen, we have the different varieties of cooking utensils that you'll be using back in the day. And this is how we make a couscous in here in this pot. And this is some of the products we use, the beans, the cracked corn, the rice, and the spices. And then if you remember back in this day, I don't know if your grandmother, because I lived in a house that had all these, the old hand pumps to bring up the water. And then the old outhouses that you'd have to go out in the winter at night, not very pleasant. And oh, one thing I did want to tell you too, here on our wall, this is a very important wall. This is in the Cape Verde in the islands when people would come over to visit. They would see the wall, and then they would see a curtain all the way down, and that would represent that they didn't have any food. So when they had it up like this, that means they did have food and they could share it with you. And a lot of them back in the days used to bring, if they saw it close, they would come and share their food with you. So now we'll go into our military room, which we try to have a lot of the pictures of a lot of the Cape Verdean people that were in the military, both female and male. We have the chief of police of Falmouth. Actually, we have his, the family has loaned us his picture, his badges.
That would be Chief Rodriguez.
Yes, it was. And then we have his tank that he had when he was in the military. And if you notice what it says on it, says Cape Cod. So that was pretty cool.
It says Miss Cape Cod.
Miss Cape Cod. Yes, absolutely. When I have the kids here, first thing I tell the kids, I said, I'm going to bring you to Cape Verde Islands. And they get all excited. I said, don't be scared, though. I'm not going to take you too fast, so I'll take you slow. So what I usually show them is Fogo. This was the sand in the beaches of Fogo. So I let them touch it. And they really get excited to touch it.
And it's black.
Yes.
Yeah, I'll touch it. Yes. Sure.
So now you know you just went to Cape Verde.
I've got some under my fingernail.
Yes, you do. And that's from
Fogo, like he said. So Fogo is the one that's the volcanic island.
Right.
Okay. When we talk to the kids, we'll say, if you can't hear it in Portuguese or Creole, if I said like Fuego, maybe a little more Spanish that they maybe have heard, they know that means fire. Okay, hot fire. So we feel that maybe the Portuguese or whoever was there before named that island Fogo because they must have seen a volcanic eruption or some smoke coming from the island.
I was surprised, too, that some of the kids actually knew when I said Fogo. Oh, fire. I said, yes, absolutely.
We would be totally remiss if we didn't tell you about one of our most fantastic Cape Verdeans. He was Judge George N. Layton. He grew up in New Bedford, and he went to Harvard. He went to Howard. He became a circuit court judge in Chicago, and he died at 105 years old. The New Bedford Post Office is named after Judge George N. Layton, and the courthouse where he last was, there's a courthouse in Chicago named after Judge George N. Layton. He was an amazing judge who started out picking berries here on Cape Cod.
I want to ask you a question. Earlier, you talked about the controversy over whether Cape Verdeans are black or white. And I have found it really interesting. It's almost like a lesson we could learn everywhere else, right? That they go, if somebody's, are you black or white? I'm Cape Verdean, right? It's like, it doesn't matter, right? Is that how the thought process goes?
Well, if you think about it this way, everyone, including probably you, have more ethnic background in your bloodline. So it's the same with us. We have different backgrounds. But guess what? We're all still the same. The only difference is where your family came from and where our family came from. But that's the only difference. So we're all the same. We all have different things in us and make us better people.
So the way it is different and the reason that we sometimes do have that difficulty in getting along, we wish it would be just that simple, but of course, being black in America is a huge problem. Racism is a huge problem. When I went to Cape Verde in 97, we visited five islands, And I said, they call it Camara, the mayor of, I believe it was Fogo. And I just asked him. So the analogy for me, I used to work for the Census Bureau and we have to check those boxes. And that's always been difficult for us to check those boxes. And I said to them, in America, it's mandated for federal grants and such to check those boxes. Do you have something like that in Cape Verde? He contemplated for a moment or two and he said, I have seen that in America. But no, in Cape Verde we have no such thing. We are Cape Verdean. The reason I put on my fro and celebrate our black side is because far too often it's denigrated. Remember, the Portuguese were our colonizers. So when we came here, when I was growing up, even to speak our language, my grandmother would say it like this, now, Barbara, so inglês, now, criollo, in America, so inglês. And she was putting up her hand, one language, because you could get better jobs. You have better opportunities. And within families, there was the infighting because you were darker and you were lighter. So it's not just race. It's also coloring. It really is sad to see. So part of this, like we said, was that we started this so that the youth growing up would understand that color or race or culture should not be denigrated. It should be celebrated.
Hear, hear, absolutely. Thank you so much.
We appreciate you coming and hope that you invite a whole lot of other people to come here and see what we put together.
That was Wesley Late, along with Barbara Burgos, speaking with us at the Cape Cod Cape Verdean Museum in Falmouth. We'll post a link with more information about the museum at our website, capeandislands.org. Coming up after a break, a conversation with Julie Wake at the Arts Foundation of Cape Cod about the strategic use of state funding to support the local arts as we ease out of the pandemic.